This is Maria with The Why, from Success to Startup Show, bringing you the whys of entrepreneurship on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3, SoCalArmenian.com. Hello, welcome to Startup to Success with Maria. My guest today is Catherine Cross, who is a seasoned healthcare entrepreneur and has her own company for umbilical cord blood banking. Her product is the Angios Newborn Stem Cell Collection Kit, which is used to collect and bank stem cells from the umbilical cord blood. Catherine, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming. I am so excited about your company, and I so wish I had known about it 4.5 months ago before I gave birth to my third child. God, I wish I knew about it. I wish you existed 15 years ago for my first two daughters. Yeah, I'm super thrilled to dive in and learn more about Angios health and share it with the listeners how they can take advantage of this amazing, amazing kit that you're offering in a simplified, you know, the cord blood plan in minutes that you're offering. And God, I'm going to let you do the talking and tell us all the wonderful things that you're offering. I'm just super thrilled to have you on the show today. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
So before we jump in, I always, and I'm very anxious to learn all about the different things that you guys offer, but I want to start off by what inspired you to start this amazing company?
Yeah. So when I was 3 and my brother was 1, he was in a near drowning accident that gave him cerebral palsy. And so from there, my parents had been looking into cord blood stem cells for him, because there's a lot of research that demonstrates that it can improve motor and social skills in children with cerebral palsy. So So that was something that I've always been adjacent to, and that my mom, for instance, has always been close to. In early 2021, my brother passed away. So at that time, I was really moved to go into healthcare and do something that would have helped him. So yeah, this company is basically in his memory. So his name was Andrew. So the company's name is Angio Health.
Wow. I'm so sorry to hear about your brother. And it's amazing to me that you took something that was so challenging and you took your grief and turned it into something that can turn into a way to help others and prevent from other people losing their loved ones. I sort of did the same thing with my Roma Leaf health and wellness brand, where, you know, it was caused because of my dad's pancreatic cancer, and he didn't want to take opioids. And then I learned about CBD, and because I had to find alternative ways to ease his pain. And then when he passed away, I felt that, you know, there are so many people that must be dealing with some of the same issues. And, you know, if I could help them ease their pain, because if they don't want to take opioids, then the pain is really horrific. And so I feel like that's amazing. We both have that in common, in the sense that we took something that was so difficult to deal with and turned it into something that can help us, motivate us to help others. Now tell me so walk us through your journey. What was it like to start Angio Health?
So it was definitely a bit difficult in the beginning, because I had to source all of these different partners and get a lot of resources that are sort of embedded in healthcare. And I think healthcare in general is just sort of such a legacy industry that it's not normally super accessible. Plus, I was sort of engaging in and entering the Silicon Valley space and the tech scene. And I think generally I hadn't had a lot of exposure to it prior. So I went to Wellesley College in Boston, which is a historically women's college and typically is funneled into finance roles. So I hadn't really had a lot of exposure to tech or anything like that. It's been very interesting to just learn about that, especially coming from a historically women's college that was Wellesley and coming into the super male dominated environment of tech. It's been really interesting. I'm super grateful for a lot of different communities that I've been able to tap into, like Launch House and Y Combinator and stuff, that have really provided me with a lot of support when I have this steep learning curve.
So when you first started, did you did you get funding to get the ball rolling, or was it simply just getting the idea off the ground, getting the connections? And
Yeah. So it was sort of a little bit of both. Yeah. So I had an initial pre-seed round that I raised, but it was very small. And so, yeah, I have recently closed out a new round of funding, which we'll be announcing soon, which will be really exciting. So yeah, it's been good.
Awesome. Tell us a little bit about that particular experience raising money. It interests me personally because I'm about to start raising for Roma Leaf.
Okay.
I'm sure a lot of the listeners could benefit from this as well. What advice do you give? How did they get started? Obviously, I'm very familiar with Y Combinator. A great place to get started when you're starting new, especially if you're taking an idea and you want to productize it. But right. I would love to hear it from your experience.
Yeah. I definitely think I always equate fundraising to dating. Like I think initially when entrepreneurs first enter fundraising mode, I think they're sort of similar to how a lot of people are freshman year when they just sort of like go on a bunch of dates and like, they're just open to meeting anyone and their time is flexible just because they're so curious. So I think similarly when I see founders first fundraising, and this was the case for me as well, they will take any investor call and they're super open to meeting new people. And even if investors have 1,000 questions, they'll answer all of them. But I think you have to sort of learn to value your own time while also being respectful to investors. So for instance, I've had investors, pummel me with questions, like email after email, like lists of questions, like different exercises that I have to do to run through the market and stuff like that, which I think can be a bit excessive and just wasn't to my advantage to put time there. So I think similarly, like I noticed a lot of my friends throughout college, like by senior year, they were selectively going on dates with people that they knew they would be compatible with, and they would kind of foster relationships early on and really make sure that they were valuing their own time. So I think similarly, as I see founders increase their fundraising experience, typically they start veering towards really making sure that they're valuing their own time, speaking with investors that they've researched that they know would probably be compatible with what they're working on, and that they're all like super respectful of one another's time. So not like going super deep into work for an investor that may not even end up investing, which I've done. So I just try to warn people to be cognizant of that, that you don't have to jump through hoops if you don't want to. And the right investors honestly won't make you jump through any hoops.
That's great advice. Now, I was interviewing earlier this week an investor, and she advised that we start building the connection way before we even pitch them. She said, start seeking out for, investors and build that connection with them, start connecting with them and get to know them. Like you said, right? Like, just get to know them. Don't just date, like eventually get serious with them. I love that analogy, the way you explained it. But I think what's scary to me is the amount of time that it's going to take to sort of build this network of connections. And then we have to put the pitch together and we have to do our projections. And, there's just so many things. And I don't know, maybe I'm just over thinking it and complicating it in my head before I actually put the work in there. But I know last year around this time, I started the process and I started working on my pitch deck. I started working on my numbers and the projections and all of that. And I even thought about hiring a consultant to help me make sure that my pitch is solid, everything is there. And then I found out I'm pregnant and I paused the whole thing because I just felt like my pregnancy sadly might get in the way of people investing in me. What's your thought on that? Like, do you think how much, I mean, at this point, I'm not pregnant anymore, so I'm going to start the process again. But when if somebody comes to you and they're like me, I'm like overwhelmed with the things that I have to do. What's your advice on how to simplify it and take it one step at a time? And, or what's necessary to even get the ball rolling?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think in terms of building the network, I do agree with the investor that you should build the network prior to fundraising. But I feel like you should only do it with investors who to you, it wouldn't feel like work. So like people that I've always admired were the only people that I put time into developing relationships with. So yeah, like female focused funds or people that had invested in companies that I really admired or people that I really thought I could seek value from. I reached out to them really early on and just asked if we could have a call, and I would just ask them about, just general advice. And I feel like it's kind of stereotypical advice that if you ask for advice, you'll get an investment. But if you ask for an investment, then they may not invest and they may not give you advice, but they might. But I think that's definitely true. Like a lot of my investors were people who I sought advice from. And there's a couple of people that did their first angel investments in my company because I had just gone to them so many times for advice that they were saying like, oh, I should totally reap the value of your success because I'm helping you so much. So they just put in a small check so that they can, like really reap benefits from it. But yeah, I've had like three people, their first angel investment was in my company because they were just constantly giving me advice. I would always call them asking questions and things like that. I think people that you really seek value from, the sort of building your network with investors should only be with people that you would actually want to build your network with anyway, not just for the purpose of fundraising.
Great answer and great advice. I think, you know, as you were speaking about the angel investors, the people that you constantly go and ask questions, I love that because then they know how serious you are and they know how, you know, ambitious you are to make this succeed versus if somebody new that just met you, they probably don't know your personality. They don't know your work ethics and so on. Now, in terms of like, for example, I do have a few people that might be interested in investing in my company as an angel investor. I don't even know where to go about, like how to figure out what am I giving them? What percentage am I giving them equity? What's your suggestion on that?
Yeah, I think, so the first step would just to be get a target valuation in mind that you're looking for. I think that's usually a metric of like MRR plus some consideration of where the market's at right now. Like I would say definitely for sure, startup valuations have been inflating over the years. And then especially, but also at the same time, the markets are sort of crashing right now. So people have been anticipating a downward trend of valuations. and then from there, you can just gauge with the investors what their typical check size is. And then you can get a sense of like what the correlating equity would be that they're receiving. But I typically don't mention valuation until there's a bit more gauging of the market that I've done. It really sort of depends. You would really want to like let the market set it. You don't have to have like an exact number in mind when you first begin, but you could have like a range, for instance, that you're thinking about, and then just sort of see where you could ask investors at the end. Typically, I just ask their advice, like, how would you think about the valuation? And then I try to sort of meet in the middle in terms of like all of the investor data points that I've received about where valuation should be. So you don't even have to have that decided beforehand, but it's good to have a general range. And then you could just get a sense of, of what their check size is. And then that will all play out. But I think generally if you have interest, then just try to close them as soon as possible, because some people start to waver I know someone that had an offer from a Russian investor and then they started to waver as like things were becoming more unstable politically. So you just want to make sure that you have like all of as soon as there's an offer, you should just get the ball rolling, I would say.
And in terms of advisors, as you're doing this process, would you need an accountant's help, a CFO's help? Like what kind of a professional could help you as you're going through this process?
Yeah, I honestly wouldn't use an accountant or anything. I think it's not totally necessary. I think the only professional help that you would need at an early stage is an attorney, and they can help advise you on sort of what they've seen and how to go about all the legal documents. But I think nowadays there's so many tools online that like for my pre-seed, for instance, I didn't really honestly have a ton of attorney oversight because you can just use the standard YC safe and send it over DocuSign. Then you can just email your wire information and then it's done. So unless it's a priced round, then it's pretty easy to put together, which it normally is that case for earlier stage rounds.
Amazing. Thank you. And the last question about funding, and we're going to jump into Anja Held, is are there any any resources where someone like me seeking to start getting investors involved, are there any resources, any places that we can go to get more help and information?
Yeah, I would say any resource that's on the YC website. I think their YC is super helpful. Their standard fundraising advice is definitely a good one to follow. Also the book Fundraising by Ryan Breslow, the serial entrepreneur. Yeah, I know he's been controversial recently on Twitter, but I honestly think his fundraising book was extremely helpful and very direct about advice. I think usually when I solicit fundraising advice from people, sometimes they're a little bit dodgy about like what they actually do. And it's hard to concretely tell what your next step should be, but his book was very direct.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Catherine. I appreciate all this advice so much. Now, going back to talk a little bit about Anja Health and the science behind it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So basically the umbilical cord is super rich with stem cells. The placenta is as well. And then especially the blood inside of an umbilical cord. So all three of those components are things that we bank at Anja. But essentially they're stem cells are like blank cells. They can be used to replace and repair damaged cells in the body. So for instance, with children with cerebral palsy, like my brother, if they receive either intravenously, so same as a blood transfusion, or if they receive it with a direct injection of the cord blood or just the general stem cells, then they will generally be able to see regenerative effects. So I read a study on another child who had cerebral palsy and used cord blood, and she couldn't even move her feet voluntarily beforehand. But then after receiving the stem cell treatment, she was able to wiggle her toes. So there was even like a lot of development with movement down to like the exact toe, like she could move one toe at a time. So So I think stem cells are definitely the future of healthcare. But it's just a matter of raising awareness, about the fact that you can capture these stem cells at birth and also making sure that, people know when you can use it. So making sure that they're kept up to date with stem cell research advancements, because it honestly advances every year. Even a couple of weeks ago, they announced, the New York Times and Wall Street Journal did coverage on a woman who received cord blood and was cured of HIV. And she was the third person to do so. So I think, there's continuously advancing pieces of research, in this space, but not a lot of people have their own cord blood banked. So, it's not often seen as a default for healthcare options, but the world that I envision is that everyone has access to their own cord blood. And then it's always seen as a default option, whether it's a sports injury or a more dire consequence.
Amazing. Wow. So, on your side, walk us through what you offer on Anja Health.
Yeah. So we have the three different options. So you can just do cord blood banking. You can also include cord tissue. So two of them, or you can do three of them and include the placenta. We basically have a kit that we can send to parents' homes. They bring it with them to birth. And then after that, they can call our pickup team and we'll come and pick it up and bring it to our lab. So whether you choose one, two, or three of those what will be inside of the kit. So it has all of the tools needed for collection. So typically a nurse or midwife will perform the collection, and it takes roughly 10 minutes or less. It's pretty quick. And then you'll always have access to stem cells in the future. So I always recommend doing all three. That's our most common option, because then you get a greater variety and higher stem cell count.
And what's the price range, price like?
So if you do, so for all of them there, we have monthly payments, or you can choose to pay upfront. So if you're just doing cord blood, it's $35 a month over the course of 8 years, but it covers 20 years of storage. So they're 12 years free. And then if you do two of them, it's $65 a month, but also includes the 12 years free for 20 years of storage. And then if you do all three, it's $85 a month, to cover 20 years of storage. Other than that, the only fee is our kit, which is $199, but we have a ton of discounts going on all the time. So the kit, price flexes, Yeah. So, but it goes as high as 199.
Wow. Oh my God. I so wish I knew about you guys months ago. I'm just so upset that I didn't. Have you partnered with hospitals and tell me a little bit about the marketing and the marketing outreach thus far.
Yeah. Yeah. So we don't have formal partnerships with hospitals, but we for sure worked with them. And yeah, we've worked with OBGYNs. We have a medical advisory board with OBs. And we have a doula working with us. So sort of all birth workers we work with. But yeah, sorry. I what was the question again?
So the question is, how did you start getting the word out?
Marketing.
That's such a niche, right? And you can't you have to create that awareness before women give birth so that they know you exist and make that decision. Cause obviously the hospitals offer their own
services,
which is super insanely expensive, by the way. So I love how disruptive you are.
Yeah. So honestly, I've been gaining quite a bit of traction via TikTok. So
stay tuned. We'll be right back on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3, SoCalArmenian.com.